You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 263 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman Green Arrow Deep Target number 1, Wonder Woman Black and Gold number 5, Aquaman The Becoming number 2, Checkmate number 5, Deathstroke Inc. number 2, Detective Comics 1044, Robin number 7, Teen Titans Academy number 6, Wonder Girl number 3, Supergirl season 6 episode 16, Nightmare in National City, Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 11, Summer School, Chapter 11, Titans, Season 3, Episode 8, Home, and Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 6, Weird Al is Dead. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news, Linda Carter officially joins the Wonder Woman 3 cast, which was exciting news to see, but they didn't say how, what her role was going to be or how big or anything like that. So,
yeah, I am curious to see how much of a focus in the movie she is. We talked about this in our review of Wonder Woman 2, that the movie weirdly was almost like the like bookend of the story was setting up this character that she's playing. So you can see how they could easily lead into the third movie with this. I mean, I maintain that they did not do a fantastic job of making that clear during the second movie. But, you know, I mean, they've at least established that she exists, so we can at least take care of some of that, and hopefully we don't have to deal with a ton of origin stuff. It can just be her doing something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Alright, up next for DC News, the Batgirls and Babs finally get their own DC ongoing series by writing partners Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad, and artist Jorge Corona. Cassie Kane and Stephanie Brown will be mentored by the original Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, who's in the announcement referred to as Oracle, which, I mean, that doesn't surprise us whatsoever.
Yeah.
Cass and Steph recently moved to another part of Gotham City to lay low so that Babs can keep a close eye on them, especially since their privacy has been invaded by the hacker Seer. Batgirls number 1 goes on sale December 14th.
I mean, I think it's a good idea for a series, Drew, and, you know, I am certainly hopeful that it's good. My concern with it is nothing to do with the people involved in the book or the characters involved in the book, but more how any of these, you know, tertiary side Batman stories seem to go. They kind of tell their own thing for a little bit, and then they fall to the whims of whatever the main Bat writer wants to do. I just don't know that we've seen anything that will suggest that that won't be the case again this time, too.
So you're worried about the book being involved in events?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've seen that happen basically every time with any of the side Batman books. They, you know, they do their own thing for a little bit. I mean, look at Catwoman was telling a pretty good story on its own. Really no need whatsoever to involve the other Batman books, and yet here we are, completely derailing its story. We'll see, Drew. Again, my concern with the book has nothing to do with the book itself, but instead the editing team or the editorial team.
Yeah, and we'll just see how that goes, because hey, I can't argue the opposite, because we've been seeing it too often. So that, I'm fingers crossed it'll be good and it doesn't get derailed by events, but.
And I have to say, and I feel like I do need to point this out too, in particular, the female Bat character books have been most effective, like the least allowed to do their own thing, I feel like. Past Batgirl books have had this problem since the New 52, if not, I mean, I'm sure even before that, but certainly since the New 52. they've put out these books and then they get derailed by whatever the editorial team is wanting to do instead with the Bat books. And they're just, you know, there doesn't seem to be a level of respect both for the stories that are being told in these books and for the creative teams that are being put on them. I would love to see that trend change.
It'll be interesting because we know Batman's supposed to be leaving Gotham. So are we going to see any events that's going to be tying these books together for a while? I don't know.
Can't you see a book, an event when he comes back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The problem what I see, Drew, is I agree. I think initially, early on, the book will be allowed to establish its own story, of course. But give it 8 issues, and then inevitably, that's 8 months down the road. You know they're going to have some other Batman event cooking up. Not that they should, but that's just what they do. They can't seem to not do that. I don't know. I kind of don't believe that they're not going to screw with this title, too.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point, the return of Batman. You know that's going to come down the pipeline. Whether it's in a year or two, it's coming. And they will make a big event out of it. All right, for our last bit of DC news, DC has announced that Mary Marvel will be graduating to become the new Shazam. The 4-issue The New Champion of Shazam will be written by Josie Campbell with art by Evan Doc Shaner, who drew the fan-favorite Convergence Shazam limited series. The New Champion of Shazam number 1 goes on sale February 8th, 2022. I know the news article made it seem like it was a big deal that Mary Marvel is becoming the new Shazam, but I have a feeling it's only for this limited series. I don't think it's going to be changing the regular DC status quo.
And, you know, Drew, if I'm being honest, even if they are, I don't know that I mind. Obviously, I like Billy Batson Shazam, for sure, and I'm not arguing that he should not be Shazam, but, I mean, DC, I don't know that they will ever fully figure that character out and have a consistent plan on what to do with him. So, you know what I mean? Like,
I know exactly what you mean, because I've seen lots of series with him over the years, and you're right, they have problems getting his character right.
And can it just be like picking something and sticking with it? They just can't do it. And so even if you don't like the fact that she may potentially step in as the lead Shazam character, worst case, it's going to change in a year. You know, like, so I don't mind it, to be honest. I don't mind it at all, because it sounds like they're trying to actually do something with the Shazam family again, which is always good. I appreciate the attempt, if not the success. So I'm curious to see how it goes. It might not work, but I'm glad that they're at least trying something.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, but I did enjoy this. I think it was last week we were talking about Billy and Black Adam Jr. I'm kind of interested in where that goes too. So, like I said, I have a feeling this miniseries is going to be on its own. So, and who knows, it may spawn off more stories from it. But I'm curious to see what they do. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Time to grab your pillow and join the Geek Father in Little Bit for discussions on current, nostalgic, and speculative happenings in pop culture. Nerd news, fandom histories, deep dive discussions, reviews, and more. It's like listening to your closest friends have a nerdy conversation. So sit back, relax, and let the Blurred Nerds podcast embrace you with their warm, goofy goodness. It's Nerd Goals for your ear holes, right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk. Aquaman, Green Arrow, Deep Target, number 1. The issue opens up in Glacier National Park, Montana. A satellite is disabled and a team has 11 minutes to build a device. When the device is activated, there is a big flash of light and then smoke. A little dinosaur and a plant appear. The man in charge, General Anderton, shoots the dinosaur. Then everything is bagged, tagged, and disassembled. General Anderton, the man in charge, is on the phone with some doctor stating that attempt 34 was successful in shifting living tissue from the past to the present. The remains are being brought back for further analysis. 2 years later, in the Pacific Ocean, Green Arrow is using an underwater jetpack to get to Atlantis. Using knockout arrows, Green Arrow takes out two Atlantean guards and makes his way to the throne room. He bursts in and starts shooting arrows, yelling, "Oliver Queen, get the hell off my throne now!" We flash back to 18 months ago. General Anderton is sitting in a chair staring at a tablet. A pterodactyl flies over his head and the general shoots his pistol in the air, scaring it off. A portal is open, and when the men see the general, they start shouting for medics. In the present, Arthur is Green Arrow and Oliver is Aquaman. They fight and blame each other for what has happened. The two finally come to their senses and work together to solve the problem. On Green Arrow's boat, the driver seems to be secretly sending messages to General Anderton. He tells the general that Queen and Curry are alive and back together. At Scorpio headquarters, an altered General Anderton with lizard skin seems pleased, and it's to be continued.
I think this is a very interesting premise, for sure. My nitpick with this, Drew, is that I'm a little bit bummed that this feels more like a B-action movie than a prestige film, if that makes sense. Like, some of the stuff, like the fight between the Oliver Aquaman and the Arthur Arrow was fun, right? But also, like, dumb from a story perspective. There's no reason for those two to be fighting.
I totally agree with you on that. And the fighting, it seemed to go on a little too long for me, too. I was like, can we get over this and start getting
right,
into
well, that
the
was
story?
The thing. It was like, it was purely for spectacle. It just, like, maybe very briefly, you have the kind of classic cliche comic thing of they attack each other to reveal the big surprise, and then you stop, and then they kept going. And it felt, again, it felt like one of those, you know, movies where they're going more for just, you know, entertainment rather than quality. That's what it felt like. Well, it's really cool if Aquaman and Green Arrow fight each other. Sure, I agree with that, totally. Does it make for the best told story? No, not really. Again, it's a minor nitpick because I certainly was entertained reading this comic, but I'm a little bit bummed because I feel like you could tell like a really interesting story with this too. And I don't know. That's okay. Not every story needs to be, you know, high art, so to speak, but you know, sometimes it'd be cool if it was.
Now, I was really interested in what General Anderton was doing, because I don't, whatever experiment they were doing and they're keeping it hush hush, I was very interested. What are they doing? What are they trying to do by bringing these dinosaurs and stuff back? And then my other question is, what does it have to do with Oliver Queen and Aquaman?
My speculation on that, Drew, is I wondered if whatever happened to that caused the body swap or power swap is the result of the general's attempts to figure out how to swap himself into not being a dinosaur again.
That could very well be. So, yeah, we also have why did that happen, so...
Well, that little dinosaur wandered into the teleporter right as he was getting picked up. Remember, he shot. So it looked like that pterodactyl, because I looked at that page a few times to feel like I fully understood it. The pterodactyl looked like it was going to eat the tiny little dinosaur, and he shot the pterodactyl away, and that made the dinosaur come closer. And it got too close, and it got into the teleporter. And I think it combined the two's DNA.
Okay, that makes sense. They didn't explain that very well. So, I mean, you just saw him at the end with the lizard skin, so...
Yeah, you see that dinosaur getting closer and closer to him in that sequence. And again, it's all wordless, and then you don't see the results immediately. You just know something went bad. And then when you see him at the end, he's got the dinosaur face, you can kind of go back and piece the two together.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Wonder Woman Black and Gold number 5. Our first story was called Hell's a Poppin'. It's written by Peter Tomasi and illustrated by Christian Alamy. Wonder Woman goes to visit her friend Hephaestus, the god of the forge. Dinah learns that Hephaestus has been taken by Hades to construct weapons and war machines. Diana forces her way into the underworld when the demon Sentry refuses to release Hephaestus. Wonder Woman battles many creatures, including a giant bug named Beelzebub, Salos, the great duke of hell, Harborim, some person with snakes coming out of their bodies, Lamia, the consumer, and other beings of hell. Diana finally reaches Hephaestus and rescues him.
I thought this was a fun story, Drew, and I really liked the way that they used the black and gold color scheme in this, and to highlight the way that they did the color on Wonder Woman contrasted the way that they colored Hephaestus, and that was really cool and well done.
The other thing I noticed about the art for the first story was how detailed it was. It was very
Very,
detailed.
very.
And I was surprised for, you know, the short stories we've seen in here, the amount of detail that was in it. It
I
was.
actually was very impressed, Drew, with the exception of the last story, which we'll get to. I thought the art was phenomenal this issue. The first was like three or four stories are just very, very well drawn.
I have to agree with you on that. The second story was Beyond the Horizon, written and illustrated by Sonia Anwar. Wonder Woman had some other Amazonians investigate a ghost that had been around for years, but suddenly start attacking three fishing boats in just the last week. An Amazon war sloop was sent to investigate the apparition, but it never returned. Wonder Woman finds the creature that has octopus arms for hair. Wonder Woman tries to communicate as well as stop it, but it goes intangible. Wonder Woman caught a glimpse of the ship it was trying to build. Returning to Themyscira, Wonder Woman learns of the boat's history. Wonder Woman returns to the ghost and is able to convince Eleanor that one of her brothers was saved and had a good life. And then we see Eleanor passes into the next life.
This is a good story, Drew. I really liked it. I mean, we've seen, at least I have, I've seen similar ghost stories releasing the ghost from the, you know, evils that it's still clinging on to. But I mean, still really well told. Really nice.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one also. Our next story was How the Wonder Woman Was Brought Low by a Mouse But Captured the Stars, written by Kurt Busiek and illustrated by Benjamin Dewey. Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor respond to an emergency at a governmental lab. Steve rushes in and sets off a bomb that knocks him unconscious. Mouse Man attacks Wonder Woman with electrical discs. Wonder Woman and Steve are captured by Dr. Cyber, Human Firework, and Mouse Man. While the villains are away, a woman named Andrea frees Wonder Woman, and with the help of Andrea, Wonder Woman overloads Human Fireworks, and the girls capture him in bottles. The other two villains are captured. We see at the end of the story that this tale was actually being told by Philippus to Queen Hippolyta, and with the moral that these Americans never learn anything.
Which was, I think, an accurate moral to that story. We saw that whole thing happened because the government was messing around with that electrical villain, and then they just do it again.
Yep, exactly. I found it funny that when we got to the end, it was actually a story being told to Queen Hippolyta, and she's like, that was a good story. Tell me another. So yeah, I enjoyed that story too. Our next story is called Feet of Clay, written by Josie Campbell and illustrated by Carlos D'Anda. General Antiope turns in her resignation to Queen Hippolyta as the queen is creating her daughter from clay. Antiope has served longer than any other Amazon and just wants some peace and solitude. One day, a young Diana shows up on her doorstep and wants to be trained. Antiope tells her no, but ends up training her anyways against the Queen's wishes. Antiope even helps Diana secretly enter into the Champion Games, where we know starts her journey to becoming Wonder Woman.
Drew, I really liked this story. I loved the artwork on it, and the framing of the story was just great. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I like this one as well, too. And like you said, most of the stories in this one were pretty good. And then we get to the last story. Memories of Hader, written and illustrated by Trung Le Nijin. Diana is working in a museum with her friend Bada. They reminisce to a time when Wonder Woman fought against her, but took the time to be her friend and set her on the right path to being a good person.
This was just awful. I can't believe this was the closing story to this issue, Drew. Of all the ones they could have picked, you just bury this one in the middle of the book. I just don't understand.
Oh, man, I did not like this one either. The art wasn't that good. The language they use, they're using these big, huge words. I'm like, people don't talk like this.
Well, you know what my problem with that, Drew, was that it wasn't really, I don't feel it was really a comic. It was somebody wanted to write, in my opinion, an essay on some stuff and was using Wonder Woman and this other gal as a mouthpiece, which you know I'm not a huge fan of. It always feels condescending to me. But then you're not using the comic format either. Like there was the fact that this artwork was so bad was so perfect to the total disregard for the comics format that this comic had. It didn't care. When you have that much dialogue filling a page, you're not trying to write a comic. You're trying to write an essay with pictures in the background. And the fact that the artwork was, in my opinion, very bad, I thought it encapsulated that part. There was just no regard for it. It didn't matter if the art was good or not because the writing didn't really care if there was art or not.
Can't argue with that. Yeah, that was just a terrible story to end this issue on. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Aquaman, The Becoming Number 2. Atlantis, The Well. Jackson is fighting his way through a horde of Atlantean soldiers trying to get away, and Jackson is able to escape. Curie family bedchambers, 45 minutes after Jackson escapes. Officers are looking for Jackson, and they bring Mira in for questioning. The officers seem to be pretty prejudiced against people from Zabel. When the officers leave the room for a minute, Mira uses a listening device to hear their conversation. The officers are dead set on trying to get Mira to talk, even stating they will use her half-breed brat if they have to. Curie family chambers 20 minutes after Jackson escapes. We see that Jackson shows up bloody and with a messed up face. Mira gives him a Justice League communicator and a weapon. Mira tells Jackson not to get caught while she buys him some time. Amnesty Bay, two Atlantean officers try to bring in Lady Lucia for questioning. Lady Lucia states that they are being followed by a speedster. The soldiers won't listen, so Lady Lucia jumps out of the plane and escapes. The soldiers show Mira video of Jackson planting the bombs, and we see that Mira and Andy escape as soon as she gets a chance. 124 minutes after escape, Jackson is hiding in a boat named the Sentinel, wounded.
So first off, I was definitely wrong with my theory, thinking he had potentially time traveled from the explosion. And I will admit, Drew, part of the reason I was thinking that was because it made the jump to conclusions make more sense. Even in this issue, they're presented with an opportunity to show why the Atlanteans are immediately assuming that he's responsible. And I don't feel like they did a great job communicating that other than they just hate people from Zeebel. But, like, that's not enough for me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it was... The book did a pretty good job of showing the prejudice against Zeebel, but like you said, they didn't really show us any evidence of why they're after Jackson so hard. They didn't seem to be caring that much for Mira either, it seemed like.
No, yeah, I mean, it seemed, again, Drew, that was the thing. It felt like they were introducing this really intense xenophobia. It felt to me a little out of nowhere. Like, it felt like everybody in Atlantis was kind of waiting for an opportunity to frame both Mira and Jackson, and I've not gotten that impression in any of the Aquaman books we've read recently.
The weird thing about it was Mira was just queen not too long ago, so them acting the way they had towards her was very weird, and, you know, showing no respect for the office she previously carried.
They were playing up how strong the prejudice was, which I get, Drew. I do get that angle, but also they haven't really done anything to lead. You know what I mean? I feel like they needed. I feel like there was ways they could have showed that lurking xenophobia that instead of just pulling it out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right on that. There would have been a better way to handle it. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Checkmate number 5. The secret church headquarters of Checkmate are being invaded by Leviathan. When it feels the building is going to be teleported, Checkmate makes a hasty retreat to the exit. Checkmate makes it outside, but are still teleported to the Thailand Sports Stadium. 5 minutes ago, Checkmate secret headquarters Metropolis. A man tells Lois to be quiet. Malcolm Merlyn is lying in the grass with arrows around him. The man states that Leviathan has this place surrounded. Let's not be here. He grabs Lois by the hand and they run right into Leviathan's soldiers. The man fights his way through the Leviathan soldiers and the two get away. The man introduces himself as Leonardo or Leo and he's happy to finally meet his sister. Markovia, Leviathan country. Mark Shaw is talking to Agent Whitney, who has volunteered for an undercover operation. Mark Shaw learns that Lois Lane was not in the church when it was teleported to Thailand. The Wonder Twins are heading up the Hall of Justice intern program. We see that Agent Whitney has infiltrated the program, but she's not the only one. We see that Damian Wayne is also undercover as Timothy Todd, which I found that name funny. Checkmate has used a secret portal door to gain access to the basement of the Hall of Justice. They stay in hiding there waiting for Leviathan to make their move. Suddenly, the lights go out and Checkmate knows Leviathan is making their move. Green Arrow draws his bow and tells Talia to put some weapon down. Talia fires some sort of energy gun. Leo and Lois are on an airstrip. Leo tells Lois he thinks someone in Checkmate is a double cross. It's either Talia al Ghul or Steve Trevor. Suddenly, Mark Shaw shows up and states, "This I wanted to take care of myself." And it's to be concluded. Of course, we already know what's going to happen in the final issue, since DC spoiled it for us.
And the reveal of this issue, the big reveal of this issue, is that Damon Rose is Lois Lane's brother, but we already know that because we've already read comics that take place after this. It's just, what a disaster from a publishing perspective, Drew. It just completely derails the entire comic.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you on that. And we know, we know that Leviathan's going to be taken down next issue. I mean, we've already read about it, so.
It's so frustrating because I really don't think this is a bad comic, Drew, at all. The only thing that's hampering it is that they can't publish it in the correct order.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, it was fairly good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Deathstroke, Inc. number 2. A research station in space has been compromised. Sources believe it's been hijacked. Trust has been asked to save the scientists and secure the research data. Hero will control the bat armor remotely from Earth while Deathstroke and Dinah travel to the station. When Deathstroke and Dinah arrive at the space station, Cyborg Superman has the Weird wired up to the station along with the scientists. The Weird is an alien from another dimension whose whole body is like a cosmic energy battery. Cyborg Superman's goal is to use the Weird and the satellite to stretch his mind beyond machines. To Dinah and Deathstroke's surprise, Hero is in the bat armor, not on Earth. Dinah frees the scientists, Slade distracts Cyborg Superman, and Hero hacks the satellite system. Slade's battle against Cyborg Superman damages the space station enough for it to implode. Hero frees the Weird, and once the Weird is free, there is a big boom, an explosion of pictures, and then the Weird disappears. And we see pictures from, we see Checkmate, we see Darkseid, we see Mongol. Swamp Thing, the Yellow Lanterns, the JSA with Lex Luthor and Vandal Savage, and Wonder Woman with the Fates, Superboy and the Flash, which I'm guessing was Wally, and Eclipso. I looked like a menagerie of things happening in the DC universe right now. Hero discovered something when he was in the satellite's computer system. It wasn't just some random research station. It was a trust station, and it was broadcasting a signal to the rest of the universe that stated, "Stay away, Earth is ours." A hologram of a woman in charge of trust appears, and she congratulates the team on finishing the mission. Hero is to report to the trust headquarters while Deathstroke and Black Canary go off after a dangerous criminal named Barbara Minerva, which we know as Cheetah. Then in the final panel, it shows Cheetah sitting on a throne in a Wonder Woman costume with other humanoid creatures shouting, "Hail Queen Cheetah!"
I don't have much positive to say about this comic, Drew. It's dumb. This is the best way I can put it. The whole motivation for saving this weird character was the computer guy going, "Well, people called me weird once, so I really feel for him on a personal level." What the heck is that, Drew? Are you kidding me? That is the most paper-thin attempt at depth I have ever seen.
I have no comment because I agree with you. It just feels weird to me that they have all this bat equipment they keep using. To me, Batman knew he was missing all this equipment or what. I could see him tracking it down, even shutting down this trust. But, we're not seeing that happening. And the dynamic between Dinah and Deathstroke feels weird. I don't know. It's just a weird book.
Well, and then, all of it, again, Drew, it just sort of feels like, what's this crazy, over-the-top, wacky thing that we can do? Well, let's have Cheetah be the queen of, is it a planet? Is it another, is it some place in the jungle? I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, does it make sense story-wise for this to be the next thing they do? No, not particularly. But is it the, wow, what's the big, flashy thing that we can come up with? Sure, yeah. I think that reflects the level of storytelling that we're getting.
And I'm not going to argue with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Detective Comics 1044. Batman and Mayor Nakano are trapped in a sub-level of the sewers, but are separated. Batman calls Oracle to find out what is going on at City Hall. Nero the 19th and six of his men have taken City Hall. A woman walks into the room stating she's looking for Mayo Nakano. One of the guards tells her this is the palace of Nero the 19th. The woman puts on a mask and opens her trench coat to reveal she's Batwoman. And then Batwoman takes them all out. Batman shouts through the fallen rocks at Nakano, who has no interest in Batman saving him. That is until the vile bugs start hatching and attacking him. Batman uses his grappling gun to break through the cave-in, and Nakano is being attacked by hundreds of bugs. Batman zaps Nakano with electricity, killing the bugs. Unfortunately, Nakano's heart stops beating, and Batman struggles to get it to start again.
I'm interested to see where this story continues in the next issue, Drew. But I gotta say, I'm pretty sure this had the Fear State label on it, but it does not feel connected to Fear State in the slightest.
I know, it's like it's telling its own story.
Which is good. To be clear, I prefer that. I like that. I'm just not sure how they're getting away with it, and some of these other books are not.
Now, in this story, Nakano has no interest in Batman saving him until those bugs attack, and then he's all for Batman's help. We see Batman zaps the bugs, but his heart stops. I'm totally expecting Batman to get his heart going at the beginning of the next issue. What I'm curious is going to happen is if Nakano is going to appreciate Batman saving his life and decide that Batman really is an ally and help side against him against the magistrate. Or Is it going to go the other direction? Nakano's still not going to like vigilantes and double down on trying to take out Batman taken out.
I think he's going to double down, Drew. I could certainly be wrong, but it doesn't feel to me like Nakano's meant to be the mayor long term. It feels like he's meant to be reigning over this kind of doomed regime, and will get replaced by non-character at some point.
Nakano is losing his grip on the city. We've already been seeing that. The magistrate's basically taking over. It doesn't feel like he really has any power. He's just reacting to what's going on.
Yes, and he also, it's just far underqualified to be doing the job. He's just way over his head.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we also had a backup story in this. Foundations Part 1. Arkham Asylum construction site. Long ago, Arkham's original architect killed his construction crew inside the asylum with an axe. Gotham City, present day, Mayor Nakano is giving a speech about Arkham Tower, which is currently under construction. The people of Gotham are not happy about the tower being named Arkham. Even Bruce Wayne pulls Mayor Nakano aside to talk about changing the name. Apparently, Arkham Tower is being built on the remains of Hugo Strange's old headquarters. A crazy old man comes running up to Mayor Nakano yelling, "Arkham is haunted! The tower is doomed! You will regret this! You know not what you unleash!" Batman decides to check out Arkham Tower, and one of the workers is bashing his own head against a window. Then he attacks the other construction crew members, and it's to be continued.
A little bit confused at what they're doing with that story, Drew. Is this where they're going after Fear State? I'm not opposed to it. Again, I don't want to sound like I need everything to connect to Fear State, and I, for quite the opposite, prefer that stuff is not. But I don't know. It kind of seemed like I don't remember them doing anything with this Arkham Tower.
No, this is the first mention I remember of it, and the thing I found strange. That's strange, is they're building it on the remains of Hugo Strange's old headquarters. I don't ever remember any story recently about Hugo Strange or him having headquarters. So where's this coming from?
Yeah, I don't remember either.
We see both Bruce and Barbara, they're totally against the name Arkham being named for this new tower, which I can understand that. Is the new Arkham Tower just going to be like Arkham Asylum? Are we going to be doing the same thing again, putting the criminally insane in this tower? How's it going to be any different from Arkham Asylum?
Yeah, I don't know, Drew. That's a great question. That was the same thing I had. I was like, I don't understand what we're doing other than just making Arkham more ridiculous than it already is.
So, I'm not really sure where they're going with this story, except for, we have people going crazy in the past killing people, and then in the present we have people going crazy and killing people, the construction crew. Obviously Batman's going to stop this ghost thing or whatever is going on, but what's the purpose of the story? Where is it going? And the silence says it all. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Robin number 7. Robin is quickly trying to read through the Book of Lazarus when Respawn attacks. Robin takes out Respawn by kicking him off a cliff. Mother Soul confronts Damian, or Little Demon as she calls him, talking about the Book of Lazarus. She points out that there is no answer in it to winning the tournament. Damian tells Mother Soul he knows the truth about why she brought all the fighters here and why she started this tournament. The Lazarus pits have leaked into the very foundation of the island itself, and it feeds off the fights. It needs the violence. It wants the deaths. Damian also tells Mother Soul he knows her true identity. She's really Ra's al Ghul, soul of the demon, mother of Ra's al Ghul, Damian's great-grandmother. Damian returns to the arena and tries to convince Ravager to leave, but she is attacked by Hawk. Damian tries to convince Flatline not to fight him, but she's not having it. And when she goes for Damian's heart, he blocks her and then kicks her into some sharp rocks. Damian tells Mother Soul that he's going to put a stop to the tournament. Stop whatever she's created here and then he's coming for her. Robin is now in the final two. Next issue is going to be Hawk versus Robin, round two. One of the things I found confusing is they're trying to make it sound like the island is some living being that's fighting off this energy the fighters are creating and death. Is that what you got from this?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's the island. Like, the island does seem to be feeding Drew, but it seemed like there was something beyond that. It didn't seem like it was. It felt to me, and I could be misreading it, that there was something in the island that was really what was getting this energy.
Like some sort of mystical being or demon or something like that?
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me.
Okay, that makes more sense than the island itself.
It felt, again, I do not feel confident that I'm definitely reading it right. It felt to me like the island gaining these powers was almost like a side effect of whatever creature is really the one that's being fed.
Okay, and I'm sure that'll be more revealed soon. I can't remember if this was supposed to be an ongoing or a miniseries, but it feels like we're getting towards the end of it, finally.
Thank God.
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, it's fine. It's not been that bad. I don't know. It's not been that great either.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those mediocre stories. Once we get to the end of it, well, I guess we'll see what DC's planning on doing with Damian, because right now he's off on his own. Is he going to re-team up with his father? Is he going to stay off on his own? Is he going to be doing something else besides fighting people? I'd like to see him go on some adventures, either with Batman or even on his own. The story with the fighting island, it's okay, but I want to see something different. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Teen Titans Academy number 6. It's summer break and the students head to Beach Pond, the perfect getaway just outside of the city of New York. When they arrive, it's bizarre because no people are here. The students head into the village of East Nyack, New York, searching for answers. They find open shops but no people. That is until Summer runs into Mr. Dalamo. He seems nice at first and then he yells at the students to get out. Suddenly the rest of the town shows up with pitchforks shouting at them to get out. The Titans power up like they're going to fight when the townspeople leave. Summer notices Greg is missing, and the Titans split up and start searching the town for Greg. The Titans follow the people back to the grist mill and discover they are under the control of Grodd, and Greg is with him.
Drew, this story was fine, but also confused me because this felt like a huge left turn from where we were at in the comic, unless I'm just remembering wrong.
No, you're not remembering wrong, because the last issue we read had to do with that Red X character or whatever his name is. So it was weird because we saw that they were going on summer break, which I thought was weird because we had just started the title. It felt like school had just started and then we're going on summer break.
It feels a little bit to me, Drew, and the comic as a whole feels like it's trying to push time to be passing faster than what we're getting in the comic, because they want you to feel like they've been at this place for a while. It's kind of what it feels. It feels like they're trying to cheat a little bit and add, you know what I mean? Like add time on. So it makes you feel like there's been this really deep experience.
I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, I know, but that's the problem, because it doesn't change the fact that there's only been 6 issues. So you can tell me that a year has passed or whatever, blah, 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 but you haven't actually shown me any of that. You've not even completed one full story arc. I think, honestly, it could work better if they were to have done, like, self-contained one-issue story arcs. I think you could probably get away with that, Drew, with really skipping forward in time a bunch, because you're at least getting complete stories, right? But we haven't gotten even one complete story yet, and they're trying to tell us that, like, months have passed. It doesn't feel like it.
No, and the other thing is, we don't know these characters. Most of these characters we don't really know. I think what the story needs to do is, like you said, individual stories. Focus on different characters, let them have a whole story that completes, and maybe we'll get to know these characters better before we move on to something big. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Girl number 3. Yara is confused when Jaro runs up worried because he lost her. They kiss, but they are interrupted by an arrow of arrows. Some sort of giant snake appears and chases arrows. Yara chases after arrows because he is in danger and she's going to save him. She runs into some weird creatures. Elsewhere, Cassie and Artemis are fighting two Amazons from Themyscira. The women decide to team up to find Yara Flor. Yara pulls out her lasso, or whatever that weapon is, and uses it to get away from the creatures. Yara runs into Eros, who stabs her with one of his arrows, and she falls in love with Eros. Yara leaves Jaro to follow Eros. At Iquazi Falls, Artemis and Cassie come across some woman. We don't learn her identity this issue. The issue ends with Yara in new clothing appropriate for Olympus and meeting Hera, who states she has great plans for Yara.
I continue to be very, very intrigued by this story, Drew, and I absolutely love how just steeped in mythology the book is.
I agree with you. We know that Eros is also, I think that's the Greek version of Cupid, if I remember right. We saw at the end of issue number 2, he accidentally cuts himself with his own arrow, so he gets feelings for Yara. And then you see in this issue, he's trying to shoot her, but he ends up finally stabbing her with his arrow, where we see she's falling for him, stops paying attention to Jaro. And we know his mission was, he was sent by Hera to bring Yara back, but we don't learn what Hera is up to in this. And if I remember correctly, I believe Zeus had died recently. Am I remembering that correct, Cletus?
I think so, but I don't remember if that's
part of Wonder Woman's story or this is separate. I'm not sure either, so I couldn't remember that. But
I don't know the full status of Olympus right now. I don't think he is dead, Drew, because I feel like we saw, wasn't he in the Wonder Woman story that we've been reading? As she's going through the different pantheons?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. You know what? I think I do remember him being alive. We've had some different stories with the Olympians. Maybe I'm getting them confused. That's very possible. But I'm very curious what Hera is up to. What does he want Yara for? And we know all the Amazons are clamoring for Yara. I'm wondering what this prophecy is that they're all worried about. They haven't revealed the prophecy to us yet, which I'm a little surprised, but maybe they're keeping it a secret on purpose.
I assume we're going to be getting it either next issue or shortly thereafter. My guess is it's next issue. I think we're going to get kind of like a stated mission from Hera, and I think that might help elaborate.
The thing I'm wondering is she up to something devious or is she up to something good? That's what I'm curious to find out.
Probably not.
And I agree with you. I had a feeling it might be kind of something devious disguised as something good. So I'm curious to find out more about that. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our DC television shows.
There are a lot of great podcasts that review Doctor Who episodes in order. The Earth Station Who podcast is not one of them. Just like the Doctor, we never know where or when we'll end up, but we'll have a lot of fun talking about it. From Classic Who to New Series and Big Finish, join the Earth Station Who crew wherever fine podcasts are found. Earth Station Who is a founding member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 6, Episode 16, Nightmare in National City. Nia has a dream that leads her to Dr. Reeve's office. Dr. Reeve ends up being her sister, Mauve, who changed her name. Nia learns about the dream totem from her sister, who states it's hidden in the dream realm. Nia and her sister team up to go after it. Kara gets a text that Nixley has been sighted at National City's sleep lab. When Supergirl, Martian Manhunter, and Brainy arrive, Nixley uses the gauntlet power to knock them away. Nixley opens a portal to the Dream Realm and escapes. Before the portal closes, a nightmare monster appears and begins terrorizing the city. Lena is able to use Lex's satellites to create a shield, keeping the monster from the nuclear power plant. Then the nightmare monster goes invisible. In the Dream Realm, Mauve's necklace starts glowing. It leads Nia to find a magical door that leads them to the Dream Expanse. Nia and her sister follow a lighted path. Nixley discovers the sisters and begins to follow them. The governor contacts the Super Friends because the people of National City are not happy about being trapped in or outside the dome. The governor gives the Super Friends 12 hours or the National Guard will take down the dome. Supergirl must deal with a riot of angry people. Nia and her sister find the Golden Spire, which houses the Dream Totem. Mauve tries to take the totem for herself, but she is unworthy. Nixley shows up and blasts them with her gauntlets. Nixley breaks down the ward guarding the totem and takes it. Mauve gives Nia her necklace for extra power against Nixley. Nia is able to defeat Nixley, but Nixley escapes. The presidents that Kara is supposed to be interviewing are running late, and the dome is coming down. Kara leaves her interview to go help the Super Friends. Brainy and Lena's device draws out the nightmare creature. The National Guard interferes and almost destroys the device and their plan. The Super Friends get the device back online and Supergirl pushes the nightmare monster back into the Dream Realm. When Kara gets back to the interview, the presidents have already came and left. Andrea set up a second chance for Kara, but she tells Andrea to give the interview to William. Then Kara quits. Nixley gives the Dream Totem to the Gauntlet and Lex Luthor appears.
That was an episode of TV, all right, Drew.
Yeah. The thing that surprised me the most, I think, was the fact that Kara didn't get fired. She quit. Andrea was going to give her a second chance.
Andrea's characterization is so all over the place. Like, when it's any of the other writers, she's this absolute villainous menace. But when she's dealing with Kara, she's got kid gloves on, and it just does not make sense.
No, it didn't. And when I watched this, I was like, oh, Kara's going to get fired. And sure enough, she gets another chance. I'm like, really? This is, inconsistent character for sure. So this episode was fine. Apparently neither one have much to say about it, do we?
No, I mean, it's just fine. I mean, there's nothing egregious about the episode, I didn't think. But also, I mean, I've been pretty vocal that I really do not care for the show right now, and that's just, it is what it is.
It's almost over, so we're getting close. I think we have 4 more episodes. I think there's 20 episodes, so we're getting close. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 11, Summer School, Chapter 11. Pat comes home with Jade and the staff without Courtney, who was lost last episode. Courtney wakes up lying on a brick street in Blue Valley in black and white. A priest comes walking by and greets, "Afternoon, young lady." Courtney walks into the local diner and meets the Zareks having a meal. Joey does a card trick for Courtney just like he did at school in Season 1. Courtney even picks the same card and Joey gets the card wrong again. Then Joey asks if she's going to lie about it like last time. Everyone in the diner gets up from their seats and starts walking towards Courtney. And Courtney runs out of the diner and ends up in the school hallway. Cindy attacks Courtney and the two start fighting. Cindy cuts Courtney's arm with her knife and she starts bleeding. Cindy realizes Courtney is really here because people from this place do not bleed. When Cindy's dad shows up, Cindy pushes Courtney through a door. Cindy asks Courtney how she got here. Courtney replies, "Where is here?" Cindy replies, "This is the Shadowlands," and Cindy explains that the Shadowlands are a void created by the darkness in humanity. The Shadowlands give Eclipso life. To humans, the place acts like purgatory. It shows you stuff you did. Courtney tries to go home and comes across her mom wishing she was never born. Cindy pulls her out of that room. Cindy blames Courtney for her being trapped here. Cindy's mom appears and Cindy tells her to go away. And then some men appear and drag Cindy away. Courtney chases after Cindy into a black swirling wind. Dr. Midnight pulls Courtney out of the storm. He tells Courtney the goggles allow him to see the truth and has kept him alive all these years. He allows Courtney to use the goggles to see the truth, and he tells Courtney when he takes the goggles off, all he hears is his daughter. Dr. McNider contacts Beth and lets her know that Courtney is with her. Jade, using the Green Lantern ring, discovers that the Shade is still in Blue Valley in two different locations. Pat and Barbara track down the Shade to a movie theater. The Shade uses his power to connect to the Shadowlands and finds Courtney and Dr. McNider. Courtney won't leave until they have found Cindy. When Courtney goes looking for Cindy, she finds Eclipso in his young boy form with Yolanda sitting on a bed. The young boy wants to play a game called Whose Life Did You Ruin? Courtney keeps running from scenario to scenario until finally Eclipso gets Courtney to say that he hates him. Courtney finally finds Cindy and frees her from the nightmare. Courtney, McNider, and Cindy all make it back to the real world, and then the Shade dies, bringing them back.
Drew, I enjoyed this episode quite a bit, but one thing I was trying to ask myself how you could do something a little bit better in this. I felt like and it totally makes sense for Courtney to go back and get Cindy, right? Like, that is completely consistent with her character. It makes sense for her to do that. But I wondered if there was a way they could have done that didn't make that seem like they were just sort of taking advantage of what the Shade was trying to do. Like, the man is literally there dying, asking them to hurry because he can't hold it for very long. She's like, hold on. Just give me like 10 extra minutes real quick. I'll be right back. I wondered how do you reframe that scene so that doesn't come across that way?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It took a long time for Courtney to go back in there. Of course, she doesn't find Cindy right away. She goes through some other scenarios. I think the better way of doing that would have been to have the other stuff take place. Before we have the Shade use his powers, have the other stuff happen and have Courtney, McNider, and Cindy all there when he does open up the window. I think that's how you fix it. Because it does seem like it takes a long time with him holding that portal open. Of course, the other thing they could have done is like, okay, we'll be back in a few minutes. They close the portal and then reopen it a few minutes later. And, it doesn't seem like he's holding it open forever. Because that's really what kills him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, now we know what his purpose was on this show.
To die?
Yeah, basically. Open that portal and die. Because, honestly, it's almost like a redemption for him. Saving them.
I agree with that, Drew. But I don't feel like he did. I don't feel like we saw him do enough that it felt like a true redemption to me. Like, he always felt like he was more good than bad. From what we saw, the Shade that we saw on the show, I think came across for the most part as more good than bad for the entirety of the show. Now, we're told that he's done a lot of questionable stuff before that. We've never actually seen a lot of that, though.
Yeah. And like you said, he's done a lot of good this season. He may be in a douche about it, but he was still doing good. So,
exactly. That is well said.
Also, it's still great to see them using the Green Lantern power ring. Even if it's sparsely, it's good to see it. We couldn't have Diggle freaking use a ring when he's supposed to be Green Lantern.
Hey, at least we're getting it somewhere, right?
Yes, that's very true. And it makes me more confident about the Green Lantern show we're going to be getting sometime in the near future. Still another good episode of Stargirl. I'm really enjoying it this season. And looks like we're getting towards the end. We only have a few more episodes left of it also.
Which is crazy because I felt like they've done a great job progressing the plot every week, but it still feels like we could be going for a while.
Yeah, I believe we only have two episodes left, so it's going to be wrapping up soon. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Titans Season 3, Episode 8, Home. Logan is talking to Molly, trying to locate Jason so he can talk to him. He looks out the window and sees a huge T in the sky. It's the Titan symbol. Dick is getting ready to head out to the gala with Barbara. Tim Drake shows up at the mansion, wanting to talk to Dick. He knows Bruce Wayne is Batman and that Dick had been Robin. Tim Drake tells Dick that he was at Haley's Circus the night that his parents died. Then one day, Tim saw Batman and Robin on the news chasing Penguin. Robin did a one-handed meat hook to scale a rain gutter. It's a trapeze move only two people in the world can do, Dick and his dad. When the Titans come on the scene, Tim started keeping an eye on them also, and Nightwing also does a one-handed meat hook, and Tim concluded that Dick was Robin and then Nightwing. Tim tells Dick he wants to be the next Robin. Dick denies that Bruce is Batman and that he was ever Robin. He gives Tim a lift home. Crane tells Jason his big plan to dump his new drug in the Gotham water supply. Jason is tired of being used by Crane and punches him out. Tim tells Dick that he is trying to figure out who the second Robin was. Tim thought it was Jason Todd until he saw him the other night standing across the street in a hoodie the night his father was shot. With the help of Barbara, Dick is able to track down Jason. Dick chases after him on his motorcycle, but Dick gets hit by a car. Jason walks up to him, but Dick passes out. Corey has another of her visions where she blacks out. This time, Blackfire and Connor are getting it on when Corey comes in and almost blasts them. Starfire uses the deprivation tank again while Blackfire and Superboy stand guard. Corey has a vision that she is at an old-fashioned theater and an old-fashioned baby buggy is lowered on the stage. Inside the stroller is a tamarind baby. Jason and Dick meet in the tunnels Batman used to use. Jason tells him he wants to come home. Dick said he needs to give up Crane first. When Jason leaves the tunnels, Dick Drake follows him. Tim runs into Crane, who has a gun. Crane shoots Tim as he is running away, and Jason comes along and asks Tim what he is doing there. Tim answers, "I want to be Robin." Crypto shows up along with the rest of the Titans, and they find Tim on the ground shot. Crane tricks Starfire into using her flame, which causes a big explosion. Crane's drug is being released into the Gotham water supply. The episode ends with Barbara putting up the Titan signal. I gotta tell you, Cletus, and I know you're expecting this. I was very happy with Tim Drake's character, knowing that Batman was Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson was Robin, and they did it very similar to how they did it in the comic book. Because in the comic book, it was like a quadruple somersault, something or other. So I'm glad to see they did something similar here with that meat hook move he used.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was very true to the, you know, history of the character, and not surprising considering, I mean, this show in general has tried to stick fairly close to a lot of these characters. The major exception has been the intense violence of the Bat family. I feel like it's been the only major exception to that rule.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Blackfire and Connor Kent hooking up did not surprise me at all. They've been hitting at that all season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Not surprising. I was expecting more from the Beast Boy storyline with Jason's girlfriend, I don't know what she is exactly. And we got that a little bit at the beginning, leading from the end of last episode, then didn't really pop up again. That surprised me a bit.
Honestly, I think that's going to happen more in the next episode. At least that's what I'm expecting. We got it a little bit here, like you said, at the beginning of the episode, but I'm expecting them to follow through with it more next episode.
Still, very good episode. I like that we're getting Scarecrow. Like, we got a very, very put-together Scarecrow in the first half of this season, which was definitely a different take on the guy. But I like that we're kind of descending into what we normally see with him, which is usually a guy that kind of can't get out of his own way, which is usually true for most of the Batman villains.
Yes, we definitely see that here. We got the typical, let's poison the water supply plot line. Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like it's overused over the years. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 6, Weird Al is Dead. York has Agent 355 and Dr. Mann stop at a candle memorial service. One participant explains to York that they attend the ceremony each Sunday, singing Radiohead's Karma Police in tribute to the men who died. Three women on a motorcycle stop in Boston asking the military if they've seen this woman, and it's a picture of Agent 355. The motorcycle women show up at the memorial service, and Agent 355 realizes they are being followed. York, 355, and Dr. Mann hole up in a church. 355 is ready to make a stand against the women tracking her. Dr. Mann and York get fed up with 355, so they decide to leave on their own. The women on motorcycles show up at the church. We learn that they are under the command of General Reed, and the president reluctantly authorizes the operation. The women chase down York and Dr. Mann in the woods, and Agent 355 successfully takes out all the women. One of the women get a good look at York, but York lies about it later. Agent 355 does not kill her, and I'm guessing this is going to come back and bite him in the ass in a future episode.
I would imagine. We can see the sharks are definitely circling around his mob, and I feel like we're starting to see, you know, I'm assuming, I've not read the comic, so I don't know where it's going to go, but it feels like his existence is going to become more known here in the next few episodes.
Roxanne leads a support group meeting. Roxanne tells her followers about how, as police detective, she routinely encounter women who are beaten, imprisoned, and killed by men. Nora tries to remove Mackenzie from the adult scene, but Roxanne objects. Instead, she tries to force Mackenzie into talking about her creepy comments men used to make to her. Nora objects, yelling that Mackenzie just lost her dad and 8-year-old brother, and Roxanne counters that grief won't protect either of them now. An alarm sounds. Roxanne and her followers grab weapons and prepare for the intruders. The strangers are an unthreatening family of survivors, but Roxanne refuses to take them in. Once they move on, Laura tells Nora, "We're lucky to be here. It's much worse out there." Nora brings Roxanne tea and apologizes for earlier. Roxanne takes off her shirt, revealing that she is missing a breast. Roxanne recounts how Amazons used to sever one breast in a display of strength, and that her chat room friends used to call themselves Amazons. Roxanne thanks Nora for the tea, but scolds her for acting pathetic. The world ended. It's okay to be yourself. The Amazons perform a funeral service where the person dies metaphorically and is reborn. We see that dirt is dumped on a woman. Then she lies in a bathtub and is washed off. Next, her head is dunked underwater and held there for a bit before she reemerges with a new name. And in this incident, the woman takes on the name Athena. Hero is sitting out under the stars when Roxanne comes out and asks her to stay. Hero states, "You don't know me. I'm not a good person." Then Hero tells Roxanne about the man she was sleeping with and how they got in a fight and how she killed him. Roxanne replies, "If you kick an animal enough times, it's going to bite back. It doesn't mean it's in their nature. You can be whoever you want here. It's up to you." Now, I've been wondering the whole time if they were going to introduce the Amazons. Now, I'm going to tell you, Cletus, in the comic book, the thing with the Amazons are, once you join the Amazons, the women will cut off one of their breasts, just like the Amazons did. And I'll tell you, when I was watching that scene with the girl, I was totally expecting them to cut off one of her breasts and was surprised when they did something totally different, which kind of makes sense for television, because that's kind of brutal.
Yeah, I'm grateful they didn't do that, if I'm being honest.
Because they do that in the comic book. All the women that join the Amazon, they do that. So I've been waiting for the Amazon group to show up. They play a big part in what goes on in the comic book series. So I was surprised they hadn't introduced them earlier, actually.
I'm very curious to see how this Amazon story continues to play out, because we can see different characters reacting to it differently. We see the former White House secretary, or whatever her job title was exactly, you know, feel like she's falling into a comfortable role. Like, she knew how to play to powerful people. in politics, and now she's in a new situation. She knows how to play the game, so to speak, right? To
yeah.
keep herself alive.
We see that when she objects and then gets chastised for it. And then towards the end of the episode, when we see her take the shovel and put dirt on the girl, we know she's following along.
Yeah. But it feels pragmatic, right? It doesn't feel like she's actually buying in. She just knows what she needs to do to survive.
She knows sticking with the Amazons. They had the whole warehouse of food and supplies, so she's in a good spot, even if she doesn't believe in what they believe.
And then we get, on the other hand, we have Hero, who we kind of feels to me, at least this episode, that she is kind of falling for the line, so to speak. Like, she is kind of going with what the drinking the Kool-Aid. And then we've got Sam, who, I mean, like, I'm scared for him, Drew. I don't think he's going to survive if they try to stay there. So,
yeah, even if Hero decides to stay there, I see Sam moving on, because he's definitely not wanted there. And you're right, I don't think he'll survive if he does stay there. Well, we saw what happened to that woman that was just talking with him. What happened to her? She got beaten.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. Like I said, that Amazon story is very interesting to me, because we've got all of these characters end up there, you know, together, right? But then we're getting different reactions to that setting. And it's going to be interesting to see, do they all leave? Do only some of them leave? Some of them not have an option. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what happens too. Still breaks my heart that FX canceled the show. Can somebody please pick it up already? Come on, HBO Max.
Seriously.
This is such a good show. And I'm definitely looking forward to watching more episodes. But it's gut-wrenching knowing that it hasn't been picked up yet. The longer we wait, the harder it's going to be. So, sad thing is, I haven't heard any news about it either.
Well, but that might not. I mean, it's not finished airing yet.
That's true. And they could be waiting to see what numbers they get back from it after it airs.
Right. I wouldn't. No news isn't necessarily bad news. I didn't say it's necessarily good news either, but like, I think we would know. I think an article would come out if we knew for sure HBO Max wasn't going to touch it.
Yeah, that's true. They would probably announce that HBO Max doesn't pick this up or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that with other stuff before, so.
Right. And we might not necessarily get it for some of the other streaming networks. We might not get news, but I think the HBO Max one, I think there's a certain expectation, at least from what I've been reading, that that's the place that it could go. And I think some people are thinking it might go. So I can't imagine we won't get some sort of either confirmation that it is or confirmation that it's not.
To me, the series is too good not to get picked up. So
I would think so. I mean, it would definitely be a shame if it were to get canceled. I mean, it would definitely motivate me to then pick up the series and read the rest, because I can't just leave it on that.
No kidding. And I got to tell you, I've already been wanting to reread it. So I'll probably end up rereading it too at some point. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Did you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yes, so I knew for sure that the characters in that second Wonder Woman story were old school Wonder Woman villains. I had obviously not heard of them before, but I knew that the writer wasn't making them up. And Mouse Man in particular, I was like, I've got to find out the story behind Mouse Man. And honestly, Drew, considering how old Wonder Woman is as a character, going all the way back to the Golden Age, He's not as old as you might think. His debut was in Wonder Woman 141, which came out in 1963. So certainly old, don't get me wrong, but if you had asked me, I would for sure have said he came out in the 40s. Like, he's just such a ridiculous character.
I would have probably guessed that too. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. He interviews Laura Vanderroot, Supergirl from Smallville, and they talk about Smallville, Nexium, Handmaid's Tale, which I didn't know she was in, and some other independent film she had worked on as an actress. And the really interesting thing I found out was Laura and Michael dated at one time. So I thought that was interesting too. But this was an older episode that I went back and listened to. So, but yeah, if you want to find out about more about Supergirl from Smallville, I just suggest you check that out. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman, The Adventures Continue, Season 2. We got Robins, Justice League Infinity, Harley Quinn, the animated series, the Eat, Bang, Kill Tour, number one. We got Superman 78, Dark Knights of Steel, The Human Target, Batman, Superman Authority Special. We got Batman, Swamp Thing, Teen Titans Academy, Wonder Girl, and our DC television shows, Supergirl, Stargirl, Titans, and Why the Last Man. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.